gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First, I was a Catholic girl. Loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning. While Mary looked up yearning, I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
And welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is Doubter 5. I'm going to patch the wombat in here. Now, can you hear me on wombat? Can you say something?
The wombat's here! Hey. What's up? I can hear you just fine.
I get an audio response from right through the roof. That's great. Welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we're a live show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a atheism talk radio show. So welcome aboard.
You're live, prove it. Tell me what day it is today.
What day it is today?
Yeah.
Hold on. It's the 8th of November, 2017. Takes me a minute, but I got it. Right. We talk about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville or the Bible Belt, well,
you're not alone!
You are not alone. There are several atheist and rationalist groups here in Knox Patch, and we'll tell you how you can connect with them later on in the show, a little after the break. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Wombat?
Yes! Yes, I knew all about it. I checked it out this weekend. It was surprisingly funny from the very beginning to the very end.
Funny.
It was a little fast at the start because, you know, Thor, his hammer got broken, then he's on Earth, then he's in Asgard, then he's in Norway, then he's in the
planet. I think you got the wrong one.
But when it got started, it was great. I'm going to give it a solid 9 out of 10. Yeah. Highly recommend it.
Although the Atheist Call-In TV show, Free Thought Forum, has not got Thor on it, it is pretty good and you should watch it. It shows every Tuesday about 5 o'clock, or most Tuesdays anyway, when they're not preempted by the government meetings. It is community access TV after all, so sometimes I do get preempted. But we'll talk about how exactly you can watch it after the break, after we get through talking about the groups, and we'll see how that goes. Also, in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you can hear them right here on this program and generally on the station as they're in rotation. Today's topic is street epistemology. And yes, and I understand you have more than a passing acquaintance with street epistemology. Would you like to go into a definition first?
Sure. Doubter 5, street epistemology is a method for talking about people's deeply held beliefs without turning the conversation into a debate or making the person that you're talking to extremely defensive or really getting them super angry and disinviting you from your Facebook group.
Or the family.
It's what it is, though, is a really, really interesting way of just talking to people about their beliefs without making them get defensive and just giving them an opportunity to reflect on what they believe to be true. Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a great way to have these kinds of conversations. So, like, if you're familiar with the Atheist Experience, it's a show that's on every week, straight out of Austin, Texas, has a lot of popular hosts, and there's lots of clips of them on YouTube. Mm-hmm. They have a style of talking to their audience where they know that they won't change that person's mind, the person who calls into the radio show. So, like, it's a show just like what we have, but, like, with a bunch of other callers calling.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But
Oh, by the way, I should give out the phone number. If there's anyone out there listening would like to chime in on any of the topics that we bring up during this talk radio show, you can call 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937 here in Knoxville. And we'll be more than happy to make your voice heard as well.
Feel free to jump in. So it's the people who call into those shows, or at least shows like that, the panelists are aware that they aren't likely going to change the person's mind who called into the show. But they're not calling, they're not hosting the show for the caller. They're hosting the show for the audience that's watching the show.
Right.
Or the people who will be checking it out on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And when they have, like, you know, their battle of wits on the show, they know that the person who's watching this on, you know, YouTube might have the same argument that the caller has and realize after seeing them be shot down, that maybe they should reassess what they think.
Right.
Or if they hear someone acting kind of crazy or saying something that sounds ludicrous, it makes the audience feel like, oh, do I sound like that when I talk about my religion or my religious beliefs or my things that I believe to be 100%?
Are these things, and are these things that I've thought about? Okay, I need to put some more thought into those topics.
And that's very useful for the audience. But what do you do when you're talking to someone one-on-one or like on the street? Because that's what street epistemology is. What if you're talking to a complete stranger and they say they believe in something that you may not believe is true and you want to understand why they come to that conclusion? There's actually a way of doing it that's really, really, really good. And I am so happy that for the first time in my life, where I've taken a clipboard and a microphone and I've gone outside and I started doing some interviews with people, I've come back with some pretty good audio takes, but albeit a little bit noisy in the background because some of the places I went to was a little noisy. But all of Sunday, I went out and I did some interviews and I can check that off my bucket list. And I had some really good conversations with people all around Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
So how about that?
Well, did it make you want to do more, or this is it? Once you've got it off your bucket list, are you just going to check it off and move on, or you want to keep doing it?
No. I absolutely want to see if I can keep this up. But I want to tell you how about this? How about I tell you how my conversations went so far, and you can tell me if I'm running up a tree or not, whatnot.
Right.
So the place that I went to do this, first of all, I went to a school, I went to a church, a UU church, a Unitarian Universalist church, which has a bunch of different religions there.
What level school? Level school was that?
Elementary. It was very, very, like, I didn't go into any of the classrooms. I was just, like, at the school. Like, I was at a school. I was invited to talk about Islam for a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I talked with some of the other teachers that were speaking on the matter. And then afterwards, And then I went to an animal shelter. And between all the places I went to and all the people I spoke to, I had five conversations. Surprisingly, in Lexington, of the five people that I talked to, four of them were atheists. But the cool thing about street epistemology is, I would say atheists, but more or less atheists as I would define them, as you would define them, but they would not call themselves atheists.
I see.
Or at least the majority of those. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about street epistemology isn't so much that it only works on religious people, it also works on atheist people too, because you really want atheists to also reflect on their thoughts as well. And I think that's a really interesting concept. So maybe as I do this more, I'll run into more religious folks. But I can tell you about the conversations I had.
Sure.
First one that I spoke to was a man named Larry. The cool thing was I met him at the elementary school that I was speaking at. And I asked him, what does he mean? Or is faith, well, I wanted to start a conversation with him. So we were talking about, like, you know, bird watching and stuff like that. And then we ultimately went into, like, how do you value faith? I'm doing like this, you know, this street epistemology. I'm doing like interviews on the streets. I'm talking about what people believe in. And I noticed that people use faith to believe in certain things and come to certain conclusions. Can I ask you what faith means to you? Like, how do you value faith? What is it? How would you define it? And basically he told me that, faith is like a feeling of connectedness to something larger than himself, basically. And I thought that was really cool. Like, so faith to him is a feeling, really, to like how he can connect to other things, other people, a sense of togetherness. Like when he goes into a room and he feels a connected human experience with people, he calls that faith. And so I was asked, so I wanted to know, does he use that kind of faith to come to conclusions on certain things, particularly like on a God belief? And I think what he immediately told me is, well, he's not actually persuaded that a God, as in the traditional sense, exists. And he wouldn't necessarily use that faith as a means to come to that conclusion. And I thought that was cool. I mean, like, in a sense, he's not using faith to come to conclusions, and he's not, and as a result, he doesn't tend to believe in things that are, like, supernatural. But I wanted to, like, try to find some means.
Why would he use that word? I mean, there are plenty of words, you know, inspiration, connection with other people, just a lot of things that you could say without using the word faith. Why would he choose that? Did you ask him what particular?
So I wanted to delve into, like, basically he said he didn't believe in a God in the traditional sense. So I asked him, like, kind of what sense did he believe in? And he said, like, again, that feeling connectedness is what he would consider some sort of, like, higher state, whether it's a being or an agent. He doesn't really care that much because he's not worshiping it as if it was, like, an agency or a figure. And so I wondered, what conclusion does he have? Like, on what basis does he believe that he's believing in something that's actually true? Just based on this feeling alone, or based on facts?
And or what he told me is this is the base.
Yeah. Right. And yeah. The basis of our conversation was based on this. He believed that he can come to conclusions on true things, whether they exist or not, using a balance between faith and something else. And I asked him what that other thing was. And he said, facts. And I thought that was very interesting. So faith and facts are like the two things he uses to come to conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I was wondering, why are you using feelings at all?
Yeah.
Wouldn't faith, facts be the most important thing?
Well, it just may be his gut feelings that he's going with. But the thing I would wonder is, what would he do if they conflicted? You know, which one would he go with?
Oh, man. Doubt aside, you could be a street epistemologist. Isn't that amazing? Like,
I might do that.
I would love to. I challenge you to. Well, anyway, so I asked him, basically, next thing on my notes is, what would you do if you're conflicted between the feelings and the facts?
Right.
If the facts said one thing and your feelings said another thing, how would you still come to that conclusion? And he thought about that for a while, and actually, he actually said this, you know, that's actually a good question. And then we just stood there watching each other for a little bit. And this is a street epistemology technique that I'll bring up. It's called the pregnant pause. The pregnant pause is basically, you might want to say 1,000 things as the person doing the interview, but one of the best things you can just do is be quiet and let the person digest the question a little bit, you know?
Right.
Don't force them into an answer. Don't force them in direction. Just give them a chance to understand what you said and reflect on their beliefs, because that's the whole concept of street epistemology.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you know, that's a good question. He stood there and he thought a little bit, and then what was great was he ultimately said, yeah, if it's just feelings, then he wouldn't, you know, be persuaded by anything. He would need some facts in order to come to a conclusion. And I was like, cool. I was like, that's very interesting. I like that very much, because I try not to, like, show my, you know, hand too much. But I thought it was very good that he came to me with, you know, I'm a very reasonable person. I don't necessarily technically believe in anything supernatural. I do believe that feelings have a place towards, you know, decision-making processes, even if I have to take them along with facts. And I basically gave him a position where if you have to choose between feelings and facts, which one's worth more to you? And he basically said, I value facts more than just my feelings. But at the end, he still thinks that it's a balance. And I said, that's totally fine. And I think we more or less ended the conversation after a really good, pleasant talk. He asked for my contact information. I gave it back. I gave him my email address. And I think he'll still be thinking about that conversation moreover. And I think we have maybe about a 20 to 25 minute talk. It was really, really good.
I would think so. And one of the things that you might want to mention is that the method that you're using in your street epistemology goes back a long way. It's generally called the Socratic method.
Yeah.
You know, where
it's just a series.
You don't make claims, but you just question the person and let them come up with their own answers, and then you follow those answers with more questions.
Right.
And it's much less confrontational.
Right, absolutely. You know, when you do that, you're really not putting yourself in the position when you're debating someone. You're just giving them a chance to reflect on sometimes questions that they may not have asked themselves. And even if they don't have an answer, that's totally fine. Because you're not trying to pressure them with gotcha moments. You're really just trying to give them a moment to reflect. And if they don't have a good answer, or if they don't have an answer at the moment, that's totally fine. Because you want to just be a person that's open to hearing them out and being a place for them to basically say, oh, that is something I haven't really thought about before. Maybe we can come back to this at a later time, or maybe that's something I'll think about when we end this talk.
And you
I think that's great.
You should also keep in mind that you should honestly be open to information flow in both directions. You're not there to preach.
Absolutely.
You're there to learn and share information. It's important that you're not just sitting there trying to convert somebody, but you're just wanting to discuss ideas and hopefully get them to think and get you, and if you get some new ideas out of it, that's even better. So it's, it works both ways and benefits both people or can.
So at this time I went over to a Unitarian church that was nearby. They started their service and their, the reason why I started the conversation on faith was because, at the UU church, they have a typically a monthly theme, and the month theme of November was faith. And I was like, what a perfect fit-in, because the first thing I wanted to do was go over to the minister, or one of the main ministers that was over there, and ask them, you know, what do you think about faith? I had a conversation with one of the pastors there, and I asked them, hey, I'm doing this interview thing where I talk to people about particularly things that mean a lot to them. I noticed that the theme of this month was faith. I'd like to hear about what you think about faith and how much do you value it. And we started our conversation from there. The thing was, I got a pretty interesting answer from him, particularly from a pastor. So he said that faith is hope and trust. And so I wanted to know what did he meant by hope and trust.
Sure.
So he was like, well, you know, if I stick my finger into fire, right? I hope and trust that it won't burn or if I had a chair, that's his example. If I had a chair and I sat down in the chair, I have hope and trust that the chair will support me. If I, you know, put down gas in the pedal on the pedal of my car, I have hope and trust that, you know, I'll move forward. I have hope and trust, and that's basically the faith that motivates me. And I was like, that's really interesting. How do I move from hope and trust as that definition to how do I, to him using it as a means to come to conclusions on whether or not things are true or not true? And so the path that I took, because there's multiple, you know, strategies that you can use from here, is when you say hope and trust, do you really mean, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I normally say that just to make sure, but do you mean reasonable expectation? For example, with the examples you brought up with the chair, would you have a reasonable expectation that you can sit in that chair, or a reasonable expectation based on, like, you know, past history, that if you put that, if you push gas on the gas pedal, your car would go forward faster? And he said, yeah, that's also a fair way of explaining it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I meant more like, so I wanted to just go back to the definition of faith. I said, you know, it's totally fine that you can have hope and trust as faith, but it also sounds like you have a reasonable expectation as faith. And would you say that's also the same thing as faith as you interpret it? And he said, you know, that's actually a good understanding, because I think he could understand where I was going with that. Because the basis of faith, at least in a traditional sense, is you don't really need evidence. You don't need to have evidence. And if you're hoping and trusting, that is not necessarily something that needs to be backed up with, you know, past history, examples, testing, all those things that he just mentioned, those two examples he gave me, were based on tests that he could do in the real world right now, anytime he wanted, by objective party, and get a result that could be repeated, and that's very much demonstrable. And it's not so much necessary to have hope and trust that a chair can support you. You can just sit in the chair and see if it will or not. And you can have a reasonable expectation of whether or not it can support your weight based on the previous history of that specific chair. And
right.
So he thought about that, and he's like, you know what, I could change. I'd like to, or he said he'd like to change his definition. And
well,
I think that's totally
good.
Fine.
That's what we're doing here.
And I, exactly. Isn't that great?
Uh-huh.
So his new response is, let me see. I got his definition here now. Let's see. He'd be president. He'd be president. Okay, so he says he needed faith to have belief in God, and that's what gets his connection to God, basically. By having faith, he has a connection to basically what he believes is a higher power. And that's what faith is for him. It's just like that connection that he needs to have with God. And so I asked him, if he didn't have faith, would he still believe in a God? He's like, no, of course not, because I feel like I need that in order to have it. And so this was my first religious street epistemology experience.
Uh-huh.
And so I wanted to find out how he came to the conclusion that faith is a reliable mechanism to determine whether or not that God is true.
Or
and
anything.
So I was talking.
Really?
Right. Yeah, right?
Uh-huh.
So the path that I went then is basically, can other people utilize faith to come to, or basically, does he use his faith to come to a conclusion that, or that a God exists? Like, is he using his faith to come to that conclusion? He says yes, and we establish a confidence level, basically, where I ask them, how confident are you that, you know, like, this is actually the case, that your faith, or that faith is a means to come to an accurate conclusion that a God exists? And I didn't give me a number, and I don't force people to give me a number. You could give them a scale, but oftentimes, you know, you have to feel the conversation to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell,
yeah,
like, he didn't want to, like, go into too much of a preamble. So I basically just wanted, like, a basic understanding of how much faith was important to him. And he said basically that if he didn't have faith, he wouldn't believe in God, but he absolutely needs God. It's a critical function for him to believe in God. And he does believe in God, so I imagine it's very important to him. And so I asked him if other people could utilize faith to come to conclusions that a God exists. And that's when he stopped and paused a little bit, and he thought about it for a bit. There was another pregnant pause, and he basically said, well, it's based on the values that a person has. And by virtue of him having good values, he must have good faith. And by having good faith, therefore his God must exist. And this was like a little bit of a...
that's a stretch. I mean,
it is.
I mean, there's got to be good people with good values in every religion on earth. Does that mean all of the gods are real? What?
Yeah. You're saying the exact same things I was thinking at the time. Because, you know, when someone says something like that, a conversation can go in like a thousand different directions.
Right.
But I think highlighting the fact that people can be good without, or people can have good values without having faith, is like the one of the key or main roads that conversation should follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, in fact, the same kind of line of questioning that I took. And I asked them, can people who don't have faith have good values, or the same values that he was talking about? And he said yes. But there was like a disconnection, because even though we just admitted that you don't need to have faith to have good values, he didn't seem to realize that as a function, he doesn't need to have his faith to have his good values, which is confirming the existence of his particular God. So, like, if he's absolutely dependent on faith to come to the conclusion that his God exists, and his evidence that he has good faith is that he has good values, yet other people can have good values and not have faith, there must not be a reliable connection between having faith and his God actually existing.
Right.
And
right.
I really wish I had gone into more of it, but I could feel by the end of that conversation, there's another thing in street epistemology called body language, or
uh-huh.
the body language
yeah.
of the interpreter.
Yeah. Well, the walls were beginning to go up, in other words.
The walls were beginning to go up.
Yeah.
So we started the conversation, shaking hands, facing each other. It was great. This was like 7 minutes worth of talking, maybe. Maybe even shorter than that. Maybe around like five or four. I could already feel his arms were crossed. He was already looking around. He was looking for other people to have a conversation with.
Uh-huh.
I could tell. Literally, I turned my head and I turned back, and he's like already picking up chairs because we're at this luncheon now. And he's just like helping some other person pick up chairs. Like, he was
sure.
gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah, it's uncomfortable. You know, it's not easy to face these things, face these troubles that maybe, or thoughts that you may have had in yourself before that.
True.
And coming to grips with them again.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's a great thing still to even have that kind of a conversation with someone when you kind of already know maybe where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it was a cordial talk. We didn't have an argument. It wasn't something that I felt like my heart rate rising or we're coming into like, I'm right because of this, you're right because of that. No, we just had a moment to reflect. And I think he did honestly have a moment where he may have asked himself some things that he may have not. And just having a stranger in front of him that he could express maybe some sense of bewilderment to,
mm-hmm.
keyed him into realizing to an extent that he may not have a good answer for the current, you know, means of how he got to that God belief.
Right.
And if he could think that over, even when we're apart, you know,
yeah.
or come to terms with that somehow, or even ignore it, but at least have that moment of understanding that maybe I need a better answer. Maybe next time I see him, I'll have something else to say.
Right.
I would love to see him again. And I'd love to have that conversation again, because I know exactly where to find him every Sunday. Clay's Mill Road, Lexington, Kentucky.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that. What do you think so far?
Well, I think it's a good thing. I've often, I have in the past, I don't know how many times, maybe a dozen times, set up a booth or just a table or just sat at a table down at downtown on a Saturday morning in Market Square Mall where people are coming in the public, you know, frequents on a Saturday morning, and just put up a sign about atheism and Atheist Society in Knoxville and just have people sit down and talk. And some of those conversations are great. And some people just scowl right. at me and move along. And some people threaten me with hell and all that stuff. But I think that these conversations need to be had. Religion does so much harm in the world today, from misogyny and child abuse to halting certain flows of scientific study.
Halting scientific progress.
Yeah, just all kinds of different things that we need to talk about it. And we'll find out that we have more in common than we have in differences. But we'll find out that the differences a lot of times are very flimsy and that there's really no reason to hold those supernatural beliefs. No, I think it's a great thing and needs to be done and we should do it more. Where are we on time?
Awesome. What is it, 7:28? About the bottom of the hour.
It's about there. I guess I better start a song and take a break.
Sounds good.
Yep. See. You got a song that you'd like me to sing? You know some of them, play.
I won't sing. Did you say a song you'd like me to sing?
Yeah, but I meant play.
Sure.
Which one?
Do you have Letting Go of God, the full song?
I supposed to. I don't know if I do. Hold on. Yeah, I do, theoretically. And we'll play it and see how it goes. I think a version that I used to have it abruptly ended. But we'll see it. We'll play it and see if this is that one or if I fixed it. And then we'll take a little break after that with a station identification. Be back in about 5 minutes. See you then.
Nice.
Girl, loved the mass. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go of God, letting go of God. Then I turned my mind to the east, the Himalayas calling me, sitting under the Bodhi tree, trying to feel something. I came back home on one leg go. So much more for me to know. I read the Tao of Physics and all those quantum mystics. Something didn't feel right. The arguments were
Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
And welcome back to the show. This is Dutter 5, and we have Wombat on the line. Say hi, Wombat.
Hi, Wombat.
Yeah, well done. Good follow-up there. This is the part of the show where we talk about the atheist groups in Knoxville, free thought groups. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. This month marks their 15th year. ASK now has nearly 800 members now, about 770, I think, this morning. And you'll find them online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Or you can simply go directly to meetup.com and look for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Also, you can join us in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Flats and Taps, I have to read it right, on Kingston Pike near West Town Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody's welcome as long as you don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Matt Delahunty. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around even longer. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. Or just follow the signs once you get on campus on Sunday mornings. That's the first and third Sundays on the Pellissippi Campus. Also, there's the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who have had enough of religion but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering, but they only meet once a month on the fourth Sunday, so you'll have to find them downtown in the International Building around 10:30, I reckon, near the fairgrounds. Also, there's a newcomer. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Since this is the fall, I have to mention that the Secular Student Alliance has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school student or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. At the beginning of the show, I did mention Free Thought Forum, which was an atheist calling.
Oh, I know what that is. So like I said, it's really, really good.
Uh-huh.
Eric was so good in the movie, but when he turned back into Bruce Banner,
uh-huh.
I was like, here we go, Mark Ruffalo doing it again. Honestly, it was the slowest part of the movie, but I still liked it.
One of these days you'll find the right show, but that's not it.
9 out of 10.
Knoxville's Atheist Call-In TV show is called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Tuesday between 5 and 6 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. You don't have cable? Then you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archive of some of their shows on YouTube where a fan has been posting them. Just search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV show or this radio show, come to an Ask meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And that song that we played during the break, you may recognize as the theme song of the show. It's Letting Go of God. It's the theme song also of Julia Sweeney's one-woman show. Let's see if I can find out who it was by. Jill Sobule, S-O-B-U-L-E, is the singer, the artist who sung the song. And I'm happy to have it. It really does represent the show, I think. Anyway, so getting back to the topic of the show, street epistemology, I think you have another story, don't you, have for us?
Sure. Well, street epistemology, just for anyone who just joined us, is just a technique of talking to people about deeply held beliefs in a way that doesn't make them upset or defensive or turn the conversation into a debate. What the goal of street epistemology is to give people opportunity to have a moment of reflection on beliefs they don't normally question, and to be a positive soundboard for good questions and thoughtful responses. That's the main goal of street epistemology in a nutshell. And so it's really, really good at getting people to examine their faith, particularly if using faith is a reliable means to get to accurate conclusions on whether or not God exists or not.
Well, let's break it down. So, most people know what street means. What does epistemology mean?
Oh, my gosh. So epistemology is basically the study of how people come to know things. And if that sounds weird, if it sounds like it's a cycle, it kind of, think about it more of like there are a lot of different machines or thought practices that people come to use to become competent on certain things. For example, if I have a favorite football team because it's my dad's favorite football team and I just like whatever my dad likes, that's one way that I could come to the conclusion that I know that I like this football team. Or if I like the football team because they have the best statistics in the league, then I can also use that as a means of determining that football team.
Gaining knowledge. It's a study of the acquisition of knowledge. So however you get your knowledge, people study that means, and that would be epistemology. Any word that ends with ology is a study of something. And this is no different. It's a study of the knowledge, of the acquisition of knowledge. So,
and how specifically do people get that knowledge? And the thing is, it doesn't always come in the most reliable way.
Mm-hmm.
Just because your father likes a certain sports team doesn't mean that's the best sports team. Or if they have the best color, or if your girlfriend likes them, doesn't necessarily make it number one in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So the way how people come to certain beliefs is really important, because we want them to have the best
most reliable tools to come into good decisions. Like, for instance, reading would be a good method of gaining knowledge. Watching documentaries, I'll come up with the word eventually, are another good one, as long as it's based on real science. But personal revelation is notoriously bad for gaining knowledge, which is what, you know, theoretically the Bible is based on personal revelation to a large extent.
Mm. Was there any possible, so what a street epistemology would just do in this case would just ask you, is there any situation where you might value, you know, personal revelations more than a documentary? Could there be bad documentaries and possibly good personal revelations on certain things?
Well, the thing about it is, you would think that if the source in an instance of personal revelation would be, you know, outside of the body, and we don't know of any intelligence that exists outside of a human body or a computer, if we really push it. And there is no such.
True.
We have no instance, no evidence of any kind of intelligence based solely in energy or the ether or vacuum or anything like that.
There's no doubt in my mind that there are bad personal revelations.
Right.
But are there also good personal revelations?
I guess if you when you say revelation,
right now,
are we talking about it has to be outside of the body?
No, just things that I'm revealing to you. Just things that I'm revealing to you about my day. You know, like I ate Apple Jacks for breakfast.
Yeah,
that's
you're
a revelation
talking about anecdotal stories and personal revelation from one person to another. Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, what makes the difference between a good personal revelation and a bad or unreliable personal revelation? Maybe it's not just the revelation itself, but maybe something else. What's the difference between a good one and a bad one? What's the difference between a reliable revelation and an unreliable revelation?
I guess whether you can test them or not. And also, what kind of source do you claim the revelation came from? If you said, sure, I got this personal revelation from my mother, well, okay, fine. You know, your mother. People have mothers. I have mothers. You know, and they tell us stuff all the time.
Said,
yeah.
Right, but my mom's personal revelation was she just rode a dragon to work.
Yeah, or a leprechaun.
Or a time machine.
Yeah.
Don't write a leprechaun. They're nice people.
Yeah.
But then maybe I need more evidence. Maybe I would need more evidence to justify that particular claim.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then the question wouldn't be so much that personal revelations are bad, but that you have a standard of evidence that certain things need to meet,
right,
whether they're a documentary or a revelation. And then when people reflect on things like that, then they have a better idea of what they need to know or need to see in order to understand if something's true or not true. And I think that kind of reflection is a worthwhile dialogue to have with people. Because, again, it's not about having an argument. It's just about having a moment to, like, talk about how we come to believe certain things and not believe other things.
Sure.
I think that's really useful.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So this is kind of the conversations that I had last weekend.
Uh-huh.
I went around Lexington. I went to a school, went to a church, went to, like, a luncheon thing. I went to an animal shelter. And I had these dialogues with at least one or two people there at each time. And then did some fun stuff on my own. But I had a mic and I had a clipboard and I took notes. And I think second to last guy that I talked to was absolutely some of the best street epistemology person talking to moments that I had. And it had an interesting challenge. The guy that I spoke to, his name was Stephen. And he was a piano player. He was really, really cool. I met him at the UU church just as I was about to head out. And we started our conversation talking about, hey, I also play the piano, me and the wombat. And he played the piano really, really well. And I was just asking what inspired him, what kind of people does he listen to. And I was taking down notes on some of the people I should follow up based on, like, jazz bands that he recommended. And then ultimately I asked him, you know, like, we're at this church. This church has a monthly theme at the UU church that I go to sometimes. And the theme of the month was faith. And did he value faith? What's faith mean to him? And he told me, first of all, that he had a pretty nuanced understanding of faith or an unheard of definition of faith that most people wouldn't use. But to him, faith was about experimentation and seeing the world for what it is. Have you ever heard that before?
No, I hadn't heard that one.
That's a new one for me. So I asked him what he meant by it, and basically he wanted to, like, clear up. He considered himself, and I quote, a settled agnostic. because he didn't believe that he could, you have any amount of evidence to support the belief in a God. But he also didn't know if a God did not exist either in that same capacity. There's no evidence to show that it doesn't exist, no evidence to show that it does exist. Therefore, he's an agnostic. He just doesn't know. And
right.
So faith to him, if it has any value at all, is in a more modern context of experimentation and having realistic expectations for how, you know, the universe works. And you could call that faith if you want. You can call it whatever you want. To him, he was like, I don't care really what you want to call it. To him, that's what faith is, in a sense. And so here was the challenge. Like, it sounded like I was talking to an atheist for the most part, but I wanted to try to clarify that point. So I asked him, so we understand that you don't know that a God exists or not. And I also, you know, that I also don't know if a God exists or not. I also don't know what kind of evidence or how much evidence would be needed to even prove that. I also don't think there's, like, conclusive evidence currently right now to come to a reasonable conclusion that a God exists. So I'm, like,
right.
in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him, do you tend to believe things that you don't know exist? And the basis of this is because I'm trying to get from the knowledge statement to a belief statement.
Uh-huh.
And I want to see if he will admit that he also doesn't believe that a God exists. Because the phrase settled agnostic sounds like it was a transitionary term from I was recently religious and now I'm not religious, but I'm also not one of those dirty atheists, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I went through that, so I knew that feeling. I didn't take that as a offense, so I just wanted to kind of understand what he meant.
Right.
And when I started bringing up belief, I think he said again, well, I just don't know. I just don't know. And I tried to make that as explicitly clear for him as possible. So he asked me, like, what do you mean? What are you trying to get at? So, like, I pointed to a bathroom that was behind us. It was a men's bathroom. And I said, I currently don't know if there's a person inside that bathroom right now or not because the door was closed. There might be a person in there. There might not be a person in there. But I don't know if there's a person there or not.
Yeah.
I also, because of the fact that I don't know if a person's in there, I'm not actively believing that there's a person in there. Like, I might knock on the door at best, if anything. But I don't know, and because I don't know, I don't believe. So what about you? Do you tend, if you don't know something, do you tend to also believe that it's the case, or do you not believe that it's the case? Or withhold belief until you have a good reason to?
Well, I don't believe, and I assume that that's what he said.
Yeah, no, that wasn't the case. He kind of sidestepped the question. And I can begin to see that there was a clear motivation on his end to avoid the atheist label, you know?
Yeah.
And my position is on these kinds of things, particularly as just a person. I don't like putting labels on people, especially if they don't like them. I want to hear people express themselves however they want to express themselves. But at the end of the day, if they fall into my definition of an atheist, that's totally fine. They don't need to have my definition as their label. If they use faith as experimentation and things to see the world for what it is, and that they don't know a God exists, and they also don't think there's enough evidence for that to be the case, it sounds to me as if they're far more in the I'm not convinced that this is true, a God claim is true, vote, than they are in the alternative I am convinced that a God claim is true.
Right.
And that's all I need for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen that at multiple times when I at least went out today, because of the four atheists that I talked to, out of the five people that I talked to, even though I would define the four that I spoke to as atheists, really only two were comfortable using that term to describe
right.
themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, in Lexington, I was not expecting to meet that many people who were, how would I put it, not religious. But it was also a little depressing to see that even the people that I met that were not religious, maybe 50% were comfortable with the atheist term.
Right.
Even if they knew that they didn't believe in a God.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of work ahead of us redeeming the atheist word because it's been denigrated for literally thousands of years at every
right.
chance and every choice. Some people have been growing up with the opinion that it's a dirty word. It's nothing that you want to claim for yourself. And when they find out it just applies to you if you do not believe in a God, then, you know, that's it. There's no lifestyle. There's no dogma. There's no holy book. There's nothing. I mean, if you don't believe in God, you're an atheist. I mean, it's just that simple. Now, some people say, well, I don't know if there's a God or not. Well, you're not talking about belief then. You're talking about knowledge. And I'm an agnostic atheist. Agnostic because I don't know if they're gods or not. I don't know. But I'm an atheist because I don't believe that there are any. It's two different subjects and two different categories.
Right. Absolutely. And I guess, can I ask you a personal question?
Sweetie.
When were you comfortable calling yourself an atheist? Was it since you were a kid, born? Like, when you realized you didn't believe in God anymore, how long extra beyond that were you comfortable with the label atheist?
It wasn't too long. I'd say a year maybe, though. It did take a while. And even then, I didn't call myself one in public. I was in the closet, an atheist closet, for 30 years. I mean, I'm 67
wow.
years old. I'm 67
wow,
years
wow,
old.
Wow, wow, wow.
I became an atheist in, like, 73. But
okay.
I didn't say the word to anybody besides my wife at the time. For 30 yeah. years. And when I finally came out in around 2001, it was because of several things conspired to make me come out and start the Atheist Society of Knoxville. I'll go through
wow.
them real quick. It was 9/11. It happened, and that's when religious people literally attacked our country. George W. Bush started giving tax money away to churches directly, which is unconstitutional in his faith-based initiatives. And the third thing was I read the book by Carl Sagan called A Demon-Haunted World. All of those happened in the same year, like 2001, which conspired to make me want to come out and stand my ground, as it were, as an atheist.
So, it's so bizarre.
And even that was 16 years ago.
Right. I would say 2001 for me, which was when I was in high school, was probably the time that I was probably the most religious, particularly because of 9/11 that occurred and the household that I was brought up in. And that was really the only way I could come to terms with what was going on in the country, where things start to be moving so much more faster. Because you got to understand, I was on the cusp of graduating very soon. Also, we just moved, and we're planning on moving again. And everything just started to move, like my people I knew were gone. I had to make new friends, but this crazy thing happened to the country. I'm going to be an adult in like a year and a half. I got to graduate. I don't know what school I'm going to go to. Everything is just going crazy. I need God. I need like some sort of anchor to like hold me in place.
Right.
And it wasn't until oddly enough, I'm going to be honest with you. I got into college. I had a Bible with me and I felt still in a state of turmoil because everything was going crazy. And the first thing I do is decide, I'm going to read this Bible from beginning to end because I still don't feel, because I still don't feel like
yeah.
I'm getting the spiritual support from just like reading Psalms and Proverbs, which is
right.
literally the only thing I did when I was a kid. And like a couple of verses from like Mark. And then I got bored and I just read back Psalms and Proverbs again. I'm like, I'm just going to read this from beginning to end because I need to feel like I need some sort of weight and anchor in my life. And I'm starting to read the book, and I'm reading it, and I'm reading it, and I'm reading it. And, like, I get to, like, New Testament, it's like, huh, okay, well,
yeah.
you know what? Maybe I just won't do that again.
Right.
Because I was waiting for, like, this other shoe to drop.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time, I'm like, oh, this
it
is
never
good.
Does.
So, like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And then I had a morality class in college where
mm-hmm.
I learned what ethics and morality
right.
actually was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go back to the beginning of the book again. I'm like, wait a second. A lot of this stuff is objectionably not correct.
Because
right. I was failing morality. I was literally failing the class
mm-hmm.
until I understood that the Bible isn't teaching me morality. The class is. Morality is a system, and I need to respect other people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to just listen to an all-powerful being to tell me that it's good to respect people.
Right.
I need
right.
to understand the value of doing that itself. And I was twisting my mind, and you couldn't believe what kind of state of mind it was. Even all of that, I was afraid to still call myself an atheist until
sure.
after I had left and graduated from undergrad and probably started my second year of grad school. It took a long time for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't blame this person for also not wanting to use that label for himself.
Right. Well, let me ask you a personal question.
Sure.
What do you consider to be the I mean, if, for people who are listening and saying, I'm not sure I really believe in God, but I couldn't call myself an atheist. And even if I don't believe in God, you know, I still respect the people who do, and I believe Christianity is mostly true. And but what would you say would be the major benefit, I mean, from leaving religion behind, no matter which religion it is? I mean, because a lot
the
of people,
yeah,
because a lot of people are terrified of leaving the only morality system that they've ever known.
Man, it's going to mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. I would say when I was religious, a lot of things snapped into place in a really, really amazing way, and it made life really, really easy for me. In other places, it made it much more complicated,
right.
But it was a comfortable degree of cognitive dissonance that I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've left out, I know it might sound bizarre, but my ability to empathize with people, particularly of people who don't share my same faith, has substantially improved. My ability to appreciate people, not for what they believe, but like of who they are and how they think, and how, you know, they contribute to society, has substantially improved. My ability to assess and reassess my priorities in life has improved. And I would say the most important thing of all is I'm no longer living my life as if I'm going to have an infinite amount of time in the future. I now realize that the life that I have now, every day that I have, is valuable and precious to me in a way that you literally cannot fathom until you realize that your God beliefs may not necessarily be well-founded. And once you realize that, you're terrified, you're scared, but you're also so awe-inspired of how beautiful the universe is and how, even though it's small, this fortunate, opportunistic moment that you have to exist in this one reality with other people that you can impact and help and benefit from, it's beyond comprehensible how fortunate you feel once you realize that. And the opportunity that you have to make a difference and learn and love and laugh and live is greater now than
without
my religion behind.
And without being told to, knowing that you yourself have the seeds of morality, you can do what you want to help your fellow man without a penalty hanging over your head. One of the chief benefits I thought of or appreciate after leaving religion is there's nobody is reading your mind ready to throw you in hell for the slightest wrong thought.
That's also good too.
It's personal freedom at the highest level that you really can't experience until you let go of God.
Right.
And we're down to 1 minute.
Yeah, cool.
Make this your final thoughts.
This is my final thought. I was talking with Stephen, the last guy that I was speaking to, and he didn't necessarily have a God belief. He did say, when I presented to him, like, well, what do you think of atheists who don't believe because they don't know? And he says, well, you know, I can hear that, but I just don't understand how anyone can not believe in like, an absolute zero possibility of God, which isn't necessarily what atheists do.
No, that's not.
When there's such things as love, peace, hope, harmony, and stuff like that. And so I only presented him with the concept of, wouldn't it be more amazing that those feelings like love, peace, and harmony came from ourselves, the human nature, than it would be as a gift that's given to us from a supernatural being?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, absolutely, I think I can believe that easily.
Right.
And I think, like, on that level, we can connect with each other, because our human nature is beautiful, and you can mask it any way you want with any kind of religion, but we are incredible beings capable of great things, and it's time that we should stop lying to ourselves and believe in ourselves and what we're capable of doing. And that's my final thought.
Absolutely true. And we're going to have to go. This is the last second of the last minute, and going to go. Remember, everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Don't sweat it. We'll see you next week at 7 o'clock on Wednesdays.
Bye!
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee.